Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with me this morning. It is May 18th. It's Friday. And as you already know, weekend is ahead. Looks to be like it could be nice weather. And isn't that nice? You know, if you live in the upper Midwest, you kind of love these weekends. The humidity's not too bad yet, and the bugs aren't too bad yet. And it's pretty sweet. So we've got a great hour coming up. Adam Holtz is going to be with us in just a few minutes from PluggedIn.com. And then we're going to talk about domestic abuse in the church. That's going to be a little bit of a touchy subject, but just want to give you a heads up. That's going to be in the second half hour. And it is May 18th, so 15 days from now. And you're taking, Rebecca, you're taking a little time off. And what, pray tell, is the reason for your late May exodus?
Well, I do actually have a reason this time, so that'll be reassuring.
All right.
I'm planning a wedding, and okay. I keep telling people, hey, I have a wedding, and they just hear that as you're going to a wedding.
Yes.
But what I mean is it's my wedding,
and I'm going
to be there.
You got to be clarifying. That's the big
yes.
word from yesterday.
It's
clarifying.
A good word. I like it.
Because I've heard you say that more than once. It's, I'm kind of planning a wedding, and they go, why are you helping? Are you a wedding planner? What are you doing? And then you're actually the bride.
No, I've discovered how much of a wedding planner I'm not. But yes, fortunately,
yeah.
I only have to do this once.
Yeah, well, that's great. And there's so many details, but I know you're excited. And
yes, there's a lot of things that have to come together. And it's an exercise of faith because I've been doing this long distance. The place where I'm getting married and the groom to whom I'm getting married are about 4 hours away from
okay.
where I live right now. So it's been a lot of long weekends and a lot of long distance arrangements. So that is in itself a test of faith and an exercise of faith.
But
it's coming together.
Yeah, the good news is to 1 billion people won't be watching, witnessing your wedding.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Can you imagine?
Poor,
can you imagine?
Poor Harry and
people?
Meghan.
I mean, that's serious.
So much pressure. Really, just what happens if one of them trips or if somebody smiles at the wrong time
yeah.
or, my goodness, everyone's going to be watching. That's a little too much.
Yeah, I mean, if I have a 6 o'clock flight, I don't sleep the night before because I don't want
right.
to miss it. Is Meghan going to sleep at all tonight?
I would imagine
that
would be really difficult. I would imagine she's got a whole crew of people to make sure she is where she's supposed to be at any given time. But I mean, it's stressful. Just the normal weddings are stressful. Family drama, all these traditions to uphold, probably not even thinking much about what she's feeling
yeah.
right now.
Is she going to do the tousled up sweep or the hairdo?
I have
are
not
you doing
heard.
That? Are you doing that?
No, mine is going to be long and flowing.
Oh, good. Oh. I like that.
I'm glad that you care, Bill.
Well,
I grew up with
four sisters, so I know this kind of stuff.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
A man of surprises you are.
Yes, yes. I don't hunt or fish. You know, for me, a great afternoon is shopping and lunch. So, that's from my sisters. Thank you very much. But anyway, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk to Adam Holtz, find out what's going on in the movies this weekend. So we'll be back in just a minute. It's about 7 minutes after the hour. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Weekend is here. I don't know if you're planning on outdoor time or if you're going to try to hit the movies, but if you are, there's no better person than Adam Holtz to help us figure out what to see, what to avoid, and he's with us right now. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. I pre-ordered my copy of Gladiator in 4K. Comes Monday.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, on my signal, unleash you-know-what,
you
right?
got that right, brother. I'm excited to see it in 4K.
You know, I can't even keep up with all the terminology with, you know, OLED, and I'm like, I guess it's an LED with an O on the front, so it's got to be even better, right?
Well, you know, when you walk into the big box stores that sells, you know, TVs, and you see all the TVs, and you see the clarity that are on all the TVs, you go, okay, that's insane.
Yeah.
And you get it home, and you turn on a program, and you go, where'd it go?
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
So you have to have the 4K, you know, player and the signal and the quality.
Anyway. It's all a massive conspiracy, right?
Yes, it exactly is.
So. Anyway, we should talk about movies instead of just bantering, right?
Well, you know, we are talking about a movie, Gladiator, which is, I think it might be my favorite movie of all time.
That's true.
Yeah, but yeah, let's talk about what else is going on in the theaters and what's coming out and what's what to watch, what to avoid.
You know, the big one that's going to suck up all the oxygen in the room this week is Deadpool 2. And ordinarily, we don't spend a lot of time talking about R-rated movies on your show, but I think this is an exception. And it's an exception because I think there are still a lot of people out there who may not know this is not your average Marvel movie. It's rated R for a reason. And I think especially if you have younger teens who come and say, Dad, Mom, I really want to go see the next Deadpool movie, it might be tempting to say, oh, it's a superhero movie. How bad could it be? And, well, the answer is pretty bad.
Okay.
This thing is R-rated for a reason. It's got a ton of profanity, sexual innuendo.
Okay.
Really, really graphic violence. I mean, some really nasty stuff. And I think it's one of those movies that the buzz culturally is huge. They're saying it could be the biggest R-rated movie opening of all time. But I think this is one that parents really need to hold their ground on, even if all of little, you know, Johnny's friends are going to see it. And it's remarkable to me these days how many kids have parents who sort of just let them go see R-rated movies without seemingly giving it a second thought. I know when I was growing up, R-rated movies were still a big deal. You know, I had friends who would sneak in and, you know, it still was taboo. And I think, unfortunately, in the culture that we're living in today, we're just desensitized and we don't think twice about letting our kids consume really graphic content, but this is an important one, I think, to hold the line on, Bill.
Good. And because it's a Marvel movie, parents don't be fooled.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Now, what about some of the other movies out there? Let's jump to one now that is like 100% on board, family friendly, and you can take your kids to, or you can go yourself and enjoy it and feel good about what you're watching.
Well, probably the closest thing that meets that description is Show Dogs.
Okay. And
Show Dogs is, it could be called the next talking dog movie. And this one is about a tough New York police department police dog named Max. And Max is actually smarter than the police, it sounds like. And he gets teamed up with an FBI agent named Frank, and they get sent to Las Vegas to bust a ring of criminals that are selling illegal animals, of all things.
Mm.
And so it's pretty much exactly what you think it would be. Here you have this tough New York dog who has to primp and preen, and if you've seen the trailers for it, you know, the indignities suffered by this tough dog are where a lot of the humor is at here. And it's absolutely aimed at kids. Parents are going to end up rolling their eyes so hard they might fall out of their head, but kids will probably enjoy it. There's a little bit of doggy bathroom humor and just a smattering of profanity. As usual, if you're interested in this film for your family, definitely check out Plugged In's review of it. But this is a, you know, sort of what you see is what you get. If you've seen the trailer, you got a pretty good idea of what to expect here.
Yeah. Adam, what kind of breed is Max?
I think he's a mutt, which
okay.
sort of makes it, you know, even more unusual that he ends up in a dog show.
Dog that talks. I never thought that would happen, you know?
Yeah, you know, my favorite image from the movie is him. They're getting him ready, and he's got a green facial mud mask on. And, you know, it's that gives you a hint of sort of how ridiculous this is and what they're aiming at to get their yucks out of today.
Yeah. All right. What about, is there a book club? What about that one?
Book club. Sounds innocuous, doesn't it?
It does. This is, yeah.
Now, this is about four old ladies. And I say that, you know, somewhat humorously.
I know you do.
It's Jane Fonda, who, she's 80. Can you believe that? she looks like she might be 50, but she's 80. It's Jane Fonda, Diane Keaton, and a couple other actresses who we have seen for a long time, Mary Steenburgen and Candace Bergen. And they're four women who've been friends for 40 years. And every month they get together to read a book and talk about it. And it's sort of the anchor point for their crazy lives. Jane Fonda plays a character who's sort of a wild vixen who does things that are pretty naughty on a fairly regular basis. Mary Steenburgen plays a woman who is trying to reignite passion in her marriage. Candace Bergen has been divorced for 18 years. And who's the fourth one? My brain is already going, and because that's what happens this time of the morning. Anyway, they get together and encourage each other, and so Jane Fonda shows up and says, "Hey, we should read 50 Shades of Grey together." And so that's sort of the comedic launching pad here.
Okay.
For all of these older women who are sort of inspired to reignite that portion of their lives. And so there's a lot of really sexual humor here, and enough that, to me, it was just a turn off. I just felt like, come on.
Yeah.
You have all made so much better movies that I couldn't help but feel, you know, are you that desperate for, I don't know what, money, another shot at seeing yourself on screen, that you would degrade yourself making a movie like that?
Now,
that said, by the end of the movie, there are some positive messages. You know, it really is a movie about the importance of family, and it really is a movie that says what we're really longing for is intimacy in a more holistic sense. We want to be known, we want to be cherished, we want to be loved, and you know, sexual intimacy is a part of that. But the movie actually has a really positive message in the bigger picture that says it's about more than that. But unfortunately, man, the stuff you have to wade through to get to that point, just speaking of rolling my eyes, like I mentioned earlier, I'm like, oh, man, do we have to have these women cracking some really nasty jokes?
Yeah, don't like that.
But it was a disappointment.
Yeah. And speaking of Candace Bergen, 25 years ago, I think it was, or so, I went through the security line at the airport next to her.
Yeah.
And I was the only time I was going, "Take your time, TSA, take your time."
Was she flying with Dan Quayle, or were they separate?
They were separate, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, let me take a break, and I come back more with Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com in just a minute. That trumpet. All right, it's 20 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. We're looking at movies that you might want to go to or avoid. Always good to be informed. And a couple of movies I want to discuss in our remaining time, Adam, is Life of the Party. What is that about?
Life of the Party is Melissa McCarthy's latest movie, and it's a PG-13 comedy about a mom who... She and her husband have sent their daughter off to college and are getting ready to enjoy life as empty nesters. And her husband up and informs her that he's been having an affair and that he's leaving her.
I already didn't like it.
She is obviously disoriented and distraught, but she put her life and her career on hold in college to have this little girl who's now in college herself. And so she's like, well, I'll just go back to college. And I can be close to my daughter and finish my degree. And so it really is about a mom who goes to college and acts like a college student in a lot of bad ways.
Okay.
She has an unwise and reckless relationship with a guy. And so the movie, you know, just uses sexual content.
Okay.
Really as kind of a joke. There's a lot of slapstick, kind of pratfalls, a fair bit of profanity. And again, it's another movie that, similar to Book Club, it sticks the landing on the importance of family and the importance of mothers. And it's got some nice, positive themes, but holy cow, the stuff you got to wade through to get there is enough that I think, you know, the vast majority of us out there say, well, I don't want to be exposed to that.
Yeah.
Get to this payoff. And I think Hollywood, unfortunately, has this notion that what we want is this sort of paradoxical mix of really feel-good messages paired with extreme crudity and stuff that gets, you know, yuck laughs on gags that are disgusting. But I think there are a lot of us that just would like something that's a little bit more inspiring and leave off with all the other stuff.
Yeah. Is this the female version of Back to School? Sounds like a movie I've already seen.
Yeah, I mean, you've already seen it. It's pretty close to that.
It has to be, yeah. All right, so yeah. Not on my list. Let's avoid.
Not on your list.
Yeah. Overboard, what is that?
Overboard is about a rich playboy who falls off his yacht, hits his head, can't remember who he is, and gets sort of taken advantage of by a woman who pretends to be his wife. She's actually his cleaning lady, and his memory doesn't come back. And so, you know, she kind of bamboozles him and convinces him that he's somebody else. But it's a movie about how a guy who really is self-absorbed, when he, you know, he comes back, he thinks he's this family man, he really learns how to be a father and a husband, and this couple actually does eventually fall in love, and they become a family. So it's a pretty sweet movie in a lot of ways, and one that has some pretty good family messages, again, mixed in with just enough content, perhaps not as much as the other two PG-13 movies we're looking at, but enough to put the pause button on before you just rush out and buy tickets here. And again, with all of these movies, you know, different people have different content issues that really are triggers for them.
Mm-hmm.
Come to PluggedIn.com, check them out. We'll give you everything you need to know. So it's another one that has some strong family themes, but enough content definitely to warrant a PG-13.
Yeah. Well, Adam, it sounds like there's more movies to avoid than to go to this time around.
Yeah, you know, there's just not much out there right now that I could confidently say, go see this. You won't be disappointed. You'll be encouraged. You'll be entertained.
Well, I thank you for informing us. It's always good to have information and to know so we can make smart choices. And when the kids come and say, hey, Mom or Dad, I want to go to this movie, we'll have better information. Much and thanks to you.
You are welcome.
Okay,
and we'll
Adam.
Talk to you again.
Yep.
That's good, Bill.
That's Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. We'll take a short break. Be back with more in just a minute. Minutes after the hour, we're going to take a little break for news, and then we're going to talk about domestic abuse in the church and what should be our response. That's all ahead next. I certainly hope your day is going well. Thanks for joining me this morning. The next topic of conversation is not an easy one, but it is one that is important, and I have in studio with me Ken Curry and Kirsten Christensen. They're both from Bethlehem Baptist. Kirsten is the co-founder of the Domestic Abuse Ministry and the Domestic Abuse Case Manager, and Ken is the pastor of pastor down at the downtown campus of Bethlehem Baptist Church. And today we're going to talk about domestic abuse in the church, and it's how do we respond? That's the million-dollar question on the table this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you both here.
Thank you.
Who wants to start jumping on that first question?
Ladies first.
Sure.
Kirsten, welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
What was the first question?
The first question was domestic abuse in the church.
Mm-hmm.
Big topic, big sensitive issue. How do we respond?
As Christ would, God throughout the Bible, from beginning to end, says that we rescue the oppressed, we uphold their rights, we care for them, we protect them, and we call the oppressor to repentance. And so that's what we're looking to do at Bethlehem Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm. With the movement that's gone on in our country of more women saying that they have been, violated in some way? Are we starting to see that happening in churches as well? Are there people coming forward saying, gosh, I think I'm in an abusive relationship?
Yeah, I think that's the DART ministry, the domestic abuse response team that we have at Bethlehem, started April 25th in 2015. And that was a response to seeing that that was in the church. So that preceded what we're seeing in this last year, unfolding last year, year and a half. And I think statistically, any Christian or non-Christian, you know, secular agencies have said that what we see out in culture pretty much is the same statistically in the church. And
wow,
that's what we've found.
Now, that's a hard statistic to wrap my head around. I would think that would not be the case.
Yeah.
Ken, jump in on that.
Yeah, I think that's the sad, stark, kind of shocking reality, is that you hope that the church would be very different from the culture. And that's not to say that there's not obvious, clear differences, and that there's not faithfulness. There's tons of faithfulness. But sadly, it's the sad reality is that the sins that we see, the brokenness we see in our world, we also see in our churches. And in some ways, even worse, is that in a twisted way, Christianity is used to continue sin. So in this situation, in this topic, particularly, not exclusively by any means, abuse runs in all directions.
Mm-hmm.
But the predominant majority of abuse takes place as men use their power to oppress and sin against women, particularly in marriage. And the sad reality, the saddest reality to me, is that is when Christianity itself is used as a justification for that. And I'll just be honest and say we've see that in our own church,
mm-hmm,
where some men have used their calling as husband and the God-given call in their lives to serve their families to actually turn that on its head and abuse their families.
Oh, that's very sad to hear. Do we have a problem with church in terms of we put on our best behavior when we walk into church? You know, we maybe present an imposter to the world when we show up, because we want people to go, hey, this family's got it all together, and what a great Christian family, and everyone's got a reputation to uphold, and we're hiding stuff.
Yeah, so I think that that's just common. No matter what, you show up to church for an hour and a half a week, or 3 hours if you're adding Sunday school in, and everybody, you know, the proverbial story of everybody's yelling at each other in the car, and then they walk through
right,
the doors, and it's, okay, now it's go time. So this isn't any different in one sense. And I just want to say that I think the difference in the church for the domestic abuse issue is that we are speaking to it, and we're making sure that we care for the oppressed, making sure that women and children, again, as Ken said, it's not always, but predominantly women who are abused and children,
mm-hmm,
making sure that they're cared for, being able to make sure that there is a safe environment that women and children can come forward and tell the truth, mm-hmm, so that they don't have to keep up that facade. And I think it's done. One of the things that the domestic abuse ministry has helped in our church is for all kinds of suffering to be able to be spoken about truthfully and to be received with care and the comfort of Christ.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like? You're saying you want to build a safe environment. Tell me what that would look like, because to me the whole thing sounds like there's a lot of problems that could happen. A lot, mm-hmm, of stuff could blow up.
Yeah, I think there's multiple levels. One is, frankly, those who preach in the pulpit need to be straightforward, have a humble attitude about historically maybe not protecting the vulnerable,
mm-hmm,
even if that's unintentional. I don't know any good pastors who – I don't know any pastors who intentionally want to hurt people. But it's a scary thing, because,
yeah,
you know, you're gonna get bad feedback from some who feel like that's out of line. But that's one level. It's a crucial level. I don't really believe much is going to happen unless the leadership says we're going to boldly step out and we're willing to take hits for the sake of those who can't defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You also, you know, if I went all the way down to the grassroots level, there needs to be, it needs to be communicated to those who are vulnerable and those who are victims. We have a place for you. You can come forward and we will protect your confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one who decides who knows what when. We don't decide that for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Kirsten has been, I mean, honestly, she's a genius. God's gifted her to be able to listen to what a woman particularly would say is happening to her and let her know that she can tell her whole story. And they're very fearful that there's going to be repercussions. So we don't out anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's the person who is the object of this, you know, this kind of sin that determines when and how to go forward. So you have to have a, you have to communicate to the people in your church. If you are a, if you're in this situation, contact us and we will protect your privacy. And I think those two things together kind of work together to create an environment where victims can come forward.
Mm-hmm. When we started on the topic of domestic abuse, the default in my brain was physical,
mm-hmm.
but there's also
mm-hmm.
spiritual, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Yep. Say more about that.
I mean, there's all kinds of abuse. So one of the things that I discovered in the last several months is that as I started looking in 2 Timothy 3, the word abusive, when Timothy's talking about in the last days, there will be lovers of money, arrogant, proud. He also uses the word that there'll be men who are abusive. And so I started to think about that word because that's a tough word for people. People don't want to be labeled as abusers, which is not our goal either. And even the word abuse just becomes very loaded. And so I found out that that word there, abusive, is also translated as blasphemous. And so you start to then think about all the ways that somebody can be abused or oppressed. That's more commonly the word in the Bible. And so it's spiritual, it's physical, it's verbal, emotional, financial, sexual, and we've kind of seen it all.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I want to be really clear about, because I think it's important to say, can't say it enough, he can use the word humble. We are very much on a learning curve, and we're partnering with other churches to make sure that we learn well. We've had quite a few different people come in and help train us. We've reached out to the community to build bridges, to understand all the different variations of abuse and what that looks like, how it gets spoken about. So spiritual abuse really is, if it impacts and is a layer or a lens of all of those other abuses.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ken is a humble guy, and he'll probably never bring up the fact he played shortstop for the Yankees. But that's just the kind of guy he is. So
yes.
Let me tell you this. I'll take a little break, and when I come back, I want to talk about some of the descriptors of abuse by a spouse or a parent even. We're going to quickly run through that list and then continue our conversation. Be back in just a minute with more. All right, we are back having a conversation with Kirsten Christensen and Ken Curry from Bethlehem Baptist here in downtown Minneapolis. And we're talking about domestic abuse in the church, how we should respond. And I was looking over the list of some things that would sort of fall under the category of spiritual abuse. Physically harming you, that seems like the obvious one. Pressuring you to engage in sexual activity. Insulting you or calling you names. Isolating you from the family. Threatening you. Sabotaging your friendships. Restricting your ability to access financial information, forcing you to diet or exercise, preventing you from working. The list is long. And it's I could go on and on. But, you know, what does God think about all this? Ken, I'm going to ask the pastor.
Yeah. Well, God hates sin, and he sent his son to pay the penalty for our sin against him that we might fellowship with him forever.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that's probably, I think you mentioned earlier, most people, when they hear the word or the term domestic abuse, they think of black eyes and shoving down stairs and terrible
yes.
things like that. And we have seen things like that. But what we're really after are people to grow and enjoy the gospel to its fullest, and sin gets in the way. And so we sin against each other. And in relationships that are the most intimate, sadly, that's where the greatest amount of sin often happens. And so
mm-hmm.
This mm-hmm. issue, in the broadest sense, is a discipleship issue. It's a matter of bringing the gospel to bear in people's lives. And one thing I want to say about that is we're very, you know, God has a heart for the vulnerable, the oppressed, and his hands and feet are his people. But we see this as a holistic ministry. And so we're after those who commit these sins. We want their joy. We want to see their repentance and their growth. We want them in our church restored.
Mm-hmm.
We're not merely trying to protect or only seek to protect the vulnerable. That's sort of the entry point usually. But part of our ministry is to call to the table those, because we know that they're not happy in this sin.
Yeah.
And Jesus is there for them.
Yeah.
To restore them.
Yeah.
And so our greatest joy and hope is to see these relationships reconciled and to see a testimony of God's power in the midst of this kind of sin for everybody involved.
Yeah. Is there a fine line between having a conversation with somebody and you say to them, oh, that's kind of a tough marriage you're having, versus you're in an abusive relationship?
Yep.
Because there are a lot of people with tough marriages.
Yeah.
There are.
And who makes the call?
That is an excellent question. That's something we're continuing to talk about even now. So there's a marriage continuum. One of the people that we've had come train us is a woman named Darby Strickland out of the Christian Counseling and Education Foundation. And she has talked about a marriage continuum that I'm trying to build on and refine, of where you have a normatively sinful marriage. You know, my husband and I, we sin against each other. I don't serve him well. He doesn't serve me well. Then you kind of move over and you know, there's a million points on this line. So you get to the hard marriage where maybe you have a disabled child. Maybe somebody has particular besetting sin that they're wrestling with. And it's just a hard marriage. Can't quite seem to get over that. And then you go over a little bit further on the spectrum and you've got a hard marriage with some abusive behaviors happening. And then you go to the far right and you'll find an abusive marriage where that just is the rule of the kingdom and the king has sort of set the law of the land. As the elders work with these cases, because they get involved with every single one, that's the big question is, can you tell me a black line where we've tipped over from hard marriage with abusive behaviors to this is an abusive marriage? And every case is so different, and all of the different criteria around it are different and hard. And so it takes a lot of prayer. And what we're looking for is not, you know, sometimes Ken probably with his wife might be defensive, but we're looking for a pattern or a way of being, of behaviors, number one, over a period of time, and a resistance to repent about those things. In the Bible, God names things, and this is named abuse or oppression.
Mm-hmm. Seems like it is kind of a gray area. How do you separate? Okay, let's say I have become a victim of abuse, and I come to some of the authorities or the elders or people I can trust, and I share my story, and you kind of scratch your head going, I don't know if I believe that. And especially maybe I don't want to believe it because I know your husband and he is a fantastic guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's you're getting into all of the places where we want to continue to learn. We don't think we've arrived.
But by accident, by the way.
But I think that there's a couple guiding guidelines for us. You know, one is we want to have an open arms to those who come forward, and what we say to them, what we want to say to them is your story matters.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to hear it. We're not here to rush you along. We're not here to push you in any direction, draw any conclusions. We want to hear your story. And to things that are expressed that are hard, we want to empathize. That to empathize doesn't mean you're saying, I believe this is 100% true.
Right.
But this person is expressing their experience.
Yeah.
And honoring them is to join them at that point.
Mm.
And then we want to say where there's places where this is wrong, this is sin, to say that's wrong, that's sin, that's not okay. And even if they were making it up, if they're making up a story about being hit or abused in any way,
mm-hmm.
it's right to say that's wrong. That's a wrong thing to happen. And then we ask more or less, you know, as we go along, how can we help you? It seems like God would have the person who's wronged you confronted with love, but with truth. And how do you feel about that?
Yeah. If someone shows up with a black eye, do we say we're going to confront the person or do we call the police?
Yeah, our protocol is that we're not the civil authorities.
Right.
And if someone's in danger, and that's one of the first things that we ask. I mean, Kirsten can fill this out a lot more, but, you know, do you feel safe? Are you safe? And if they say, I don't feel safe, then we want to help them get safe. And if they're under threat, then we're and particularly if it's an immediate threat, then we would involve the authorities. That's much a more, you know, that's not the common thing. But we can tell you stories that are just really, really bad. And we have involved the police at times. And we ask ourselves that question. Is this person, are they in danger? And if they are, then God has given the civil authorities for that reason to protect the people.
Mm-hmm. Now, go ahead, Kirsten.
Well, we're just to say again, we are constantly connecting with civil authorities, with agencies around here, because we want to learn, grow. We want to make use of resources that are already exist. We have a very much a team approach with the domestic abuse ministry. So there's never, when a woman comes forward, there are always two elders assigned. There's a domestic abuse support person. And then we start pulling in resources, counseling, civil authorities, agencies, that kind of thing, so that there are many eyes on a situation and everybody can come to an agreement of, you know, we've walked this out over several, many months, sometimes a year, 2 years now, and this is what we see.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say one thing real quick?
Yeah.
Just on when I said confront the person, what I mean by that is not accuse the person. So if someone comes forward and says they're a victim of abuse and we want to go and confront the person, what we say is, this is what's been reported.
Okay.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Not you did this and you better repent.
Right.
And I'm just going to tell you, the Holy Spirit so often works in those moments because we're coming with boldness, Lord willing, but with love and boldness and saying, this is a safe place for you, brother. Mm-hmm. If you have sinned this way, it is time to grow and we're with you in that. We want to help you in that. But it starts with acknowledging this is what I did.
Yeah.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
Is that the story? And then it goes in every direction at that point. But we're not accusers.
Right.
So, and we're not convictors. Jesus is the convictor of sin, the Holy Spirit. But we are the means to bring it forward.
Yeah.
And that's what we do.
Now, this conversation we're having this morning is a wake-up call for some listener. And they're thinking, this is what I needed to hear. I need to take action right now because I can't do this anymore. How would that person start that process? If you can kind of give us a phone number or a website or something in 20 seconds or so.
The Bethlehem Domestic Abuse Ministry was created by Bethlehem for Bethlehem members, regular attenders. But there are several agencies like Alexander House, The Dwelling Place, the DAP Domestic Abuse Project. It really is easy to find help that way.
What about if I'm living in Fargo? Would you recommend that person going to their pastor? Or their church, or is the average church equipped to handle this situation?
I think ultimately in the church is the place where it needs to happen, but sadly many churches aren't equipped.
Okay.
I say they try it, but if you can't get help, don't stop there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wish we had more time. Honestly, this is so interesting and it's so important and it's such a vital conversation to be having. And thank you so much for coming into the studio. My guests have been Kirsten Christensen and Ken Curry from Bethlehem Baptist. A fantastic church and a great program there. And we can probably, we'll have you back to continue this conversation. I'd like to open the phone lines, but we're out of time. We'll do that next time. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. A big thanks to Ken and Kirsten for a great interview. That is a lot of things to chew on, domestic abuse in the church and how to respond. All my guests today have been superb. Thank you so much, Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com and Alex McFarland, Carmen LaBurge. What a lineup. What a show. I'm so glad you listened, and I certainly hope you have a great weekend. I will see you Monday. I'm thinking I'm on my way to my Bible study now. We're in Ephesians. That's going to be exciting. No one in my Bible study is listening right now because they're actually in the study. And I'm going to be a little late, but I'm still going to hustle to get there. And I just want to leave you with Romans. Oh, the depth of his riches, of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable his judgments and his paths beyond tracing out. See you Monday.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.